Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
From KQED. Hey everyone, from KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer, and today on The Breakdown, we're sitting down with the head of San Francisco's Chinese Hospital, where fears of devastation from COVID-19 did not come to pass.
That's right. Dr. Jen Zhang is here. She has a fascinating life story and has worked her way up from CEO to CEO of the hospital after coming to the U.S. as a medical student. But first, Scott, let's talk about the news of the week as we do, starting with Vice President Kamala Harris's first trip back to her hometown of Oakland on Monday. You were there. Tell us about the visit and why was she here?
Yeah, well, you know, this was her returning visit, first one as VP to her hometown. And, you know, there was a lot of hometown love. You could, everywhere she went and everyone who talked said how happy they were to see her, including Barbara Lee, the congresswoman, who made a point of saying that Kamala Harris was born in her congressional district. You know, everybody wanted to take a little bit of credit for that. You know, she came to town. She had been in Los Angeles for the weekend. She was there for Easter, came up, and really was here to plug the infrastructure, the American Jobs Plan, as they call it. And she made a couple of stops. She went up to Upper Oakland, sort of the hills of Oakland a little bit. There was a water treatment plant that she went to. That's where the governor met with her, Governor Newsom. She got a tour, and you know, it was very choreographed. There were X's on the sidewalk where everybody was supposed to stand. And she did plug that and clean water and the importance of clean water and the money that's in the infrastructure proposal, you know, to pay for that. And then she went to a small business, Red Door Catering, which has gotten money from a small loan program from the government. And she was talking about entrepreneurship and the importance of making sure small, especially women and minority-owned businesses have access to credit. So that was sort of the, you know, the reason for it. The frustrating thing, I mean, it was kind of interesting. I was the radio pool, as you said. And, you know, the frustrating part was just that she didn't take any questions, you know, and you can't just, there wasn't even an opportunity to yell questions, you know, so it was very choreographed.
Yeah, I mean, and the governor was there with her, Scott. I mean, what was your impression? These are kind of longtime allies, but also competitors.
Frenemies.
Yeah, I think it's probably mellowed out in recent years as their paths have sort of diverged outside of the city. But what was the vibe there, especially given that we're still in the middle of counting these recall signatures?
Yeah,
for the governor.
It was very interesting, Marisa. I mean, you know, first of all, everyone was there to see her, not to see him. And he knew that. He knew what his role was. He was very deferential. He spoke when he spoke for about a minute and a half, which, as those of us who cover the governor know, that is pretty brief.
Yeah, that is brevity for Newsom.
That is brevity. Yeah, that's so he talked about the drought. She talked about him briefly, saying, you know, he has great environmental credentials. She did not mention the recall. She mentioned they'd both been elected in 2003. They've worked together a lot. You know, it was interesting because he said to her, "We have your back," talking about the infrastructure plan, which was interesting because I think what he really wants is to know that they have his back in terms of the recall.
I'm sure they will. And you also wonder if he even wants to bring up the recall. I mean, this is, you know, the whole point of her trip is to really sell this recovery plan as well as the new infrastructure and jobs bills that they're pushing. We just heard today that there's going to be an aerospace federal investment in L.A., something I'm sure he's been bending the VP's ear about. Also this week, though, Scott, Newsom made some big, big, big news, which thinking back to a year ago, we wouldn't have. I don't know. Do we expect it to happen or never, or that it would have happened sooner? But he is now saying that by June 15th, we will fully reopen the economy in California if we have enough vaccines in arms and hospital rates remain low. Obviously, great news for businesses. I'm kind of going to be watching to see how the public responds, and just in the sense of like consumer confidence. I think some people, you know, who may be comfortable going to restaurants at 25% capacity, which is not great for restaurants.
Although they have their parklets now, so that's really, in some cases made the restaurants even bigger than they were.
Yeah, but it'll be fascinating to see kind of what the response is more globally among both businesses and the public, I think, as we approach this June 15th date.
Yeah, totally. And of course, it's a bit of the roll of the dice for him because, you know, we have seen in recent days a slight uptick in the positivity rate. It's still very low. It's about 1.8-1.9%, which is, I think, the lowest in the country among the states, which is very good. Hospitalizations very low. But, you know, with the variants, and he talked about this, I mean, there is the possibility that June 15th will get here and we're not going to be ready to reopen completely. That said, I think, you know, the upside is a summer of normalcy that people will be experiencing and teachers and parents and kids and, you know, coming into the recall. That's a good thing for him politically.
Yeah. I mean, my kid goes back to the classroom for the first time in over a year, a week from Monday, and it's a short day, but we all have hopes for the fall. A lot of, you know, I think we got to mention the recall and also the fact that a lot of people who are supporting the recall felt like this was a political decision by him, that he didn't need to do it so soon, that he did it because of the pressure. We'll leave that to other pundits for now, Scott. But we did have some interesting news this week, which is San Francisco's own Harmeet Dillon, lawyer and Republican National Committee woman, is now advising Caitlyn Jenner, former Olympic athlete, former
Kardashian family member
star, who is weighing around as a Republican, she's pretty conservative, for the recall. So is Caitlyn Jenner the next Arnold Schwarzenegger, Scott?
You know, it does bring back echoes of 2003, but, you know, I will say it'll certainly bring the national press out here and it'll heighten interest in the recall, but just because of the, I mean, you know, she's never run for anything. I don't think you would say she's qualified to be governor of California, but she is a media magnet.
And, you said it, not me. I mean, what is qualified?
Yeah,
we'll have plenty of time to chew that over. It seems like she has not fully decided whether to run yet.
One interesting, I do think that Harmeet Dillon, being her general counsel, or, you know, suggests that she, you know, people, the Republican base, the hardcore Republicans, are not happy with the choices right now. Meaning Kevin Faulkner, former, you know, mayor of San Diego, who they would call a rhino, Republican in name only.
And she is getting advised by Brad Pascali, the former Trump advisor. So she's tying herself to Trump from the get-go. All right. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we'll be joined by the CEO of San Francisco's Chinese Hospital, Dr. Zhen Zhang. You are listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos here with Scott Schaefer, and we are joined by Dr. Zhen Zhang. She is CEO of Chinese Hospital here in San Francisco. Dr. Zhang, welcome to The Breakdown.
Hi, Marisa. Hi, Scott. You're very nice to see you again. Thank you.
Yeah, I am so happy to have you join us. I should say we first talked a year ago when I was working on a big project with Reveal and some reporters in Miami, kind of comparing the Florida and California responses. And we've learned a lot since last May about COVID-19 and the coronavirus. But we thought we'd start, you know, we want to talk about how well you all have handled this pandemic in Chinatown at the Chinese Hospital. But first, I want to give, you know, our listeners an opportunity to understand how you even came to this role. So you grew up in China, and I think were a medical student who came to study here. Can you go back a little bit? Tell us, I mean, was medicine always something you planned on going into? And I don't know, it seems like a pretty amazing rise to become CEO of a hospital.
Sure was. It has been so long. So I came to this country to study at UCSF, actually School of Nursing, as a master's student in UCSF. So I ended up doing my clinical rotation here in Chinese hospital. I was shocked when I was told that there was a Chinese hospital here in United States, apparently. And so coming in here really shocked me to see a Chinese hospital here, like, you know, serving mainly the low income new immigrants, and then a lot of seniors here. And so ended up doing a lot of grant writing and helping the low income people. And then so after I graduated, then I work here at the ED, and then also later on working in many departments, and then created all the clinics for the hospital. And then come back to the hospital, in 2015 as a COO, and then I took on the CEO position at the end of 2017.
What did you notice in terms of differences in healthcare and medicine between China and San Francisco or the United States?
It's very different. I think the practice model and payment model is very different. And then, however, we serve a lot of the same populations because a lot of immigrants are actually coming from China, right? And so I think the cultural piece and then the language capacity, very important for people who are sick. And especially during the pandemic, I can tell you that it really make a difference. When PPE was so short and you have someone who's sick, like infected with COVID and being isolated. And then, you know, if you need to find someone to translate for them, it's almost impossible there, right? Like in the real world.
Like through the mask and all the,
And the face shield and everything. And then, and waste the PPE too, right? To get another person in the room to do that. So we've seen a lot of the culture piece and then the language piece in this. It's very, very important.
Can I ask, before we talk about the last year and everything, I mean, were your parents in medicine? My understanding when we last talked is that you started out in nursing. So like, was this an expected, not just coming to America, but becoming a doctor, was that something that your family would have expected?
Yeah, in China, it's very different. So we went to medical school directly from high school, not like here that you would go to college first and then you apply for med school. So in China, you go to med school directly from high school. So I went to Sun Yat-sen University of Medical Sciences in China. And then you go in and then with different, in a same medical school, you have different majors, right? And so right after that medical school, so I actually was sent by the university to United States to get a master's degree and will go back to help create a nursing program. Because there was a BS prepared nursing students like they're in China. And then it's very interesting. So the BSN program was created in the 80s, actually. And then I was supposed to be helping with the graduate program in China. So it's very, very different.
You never went back, though.
I did. I actually still go. I'm still going back every year to help out, actually, you know, with
that. You must have a lot of family there, I imagine.
Yeah,
I still have family there. And I also, I go back there to teach every year to do leadership training. Hmm. And so I'm still helping a lot of the international work, like to build the international relationship for both U.S. and China.
I want to ask you about the pandemic and the early, you were among the first to recognize the threat, you know, in January of 2020, before it was really on the radar for a lot of people. And, you know, as Marisa reported, you had great fears about what could happen in a community like Chinatown, very dense, a lot of SRO hotels. Talk about, you know, what your fears were and why they didn't come to pass.
So that's right. I mean, like now we can laugh about it, we can talk about it, but back in January 2020, that wasn't the case. So we were really concerned, very scared, because I think everybody was thinking that the outbreak here would be in Chinatown because of the living condition here in Chinatown, being the San Francisco Chinatown, being the second most densely populated area, right, in the nation. And then also too, it's a Chinese New Year, a lot of people traveling from China, and all our residents are going back to China for New Year and coming back. So then there's direct flights, and most importantly, because we didn't know much about the virus at that time. And so I talk a lot with my colleagues in China, and then some of them were deployed to Wuhan to help out. And so we started very, very early. I think the early prevention and early education really make a huge difference. And then now thinking back that, you know, like what we have done differently, I think that we probably start month earlier compared to other parts of the country for this, because that we created the hotline, we did a lot of community outreach, we educated community about the virus, also we learn about the virus actually. And then a lot of other things now really think about it that, for Chinatown, I think the good thing is that we have our own healthcare system here, like having a Chinese hospital here, and really makes a huge difference. And I think then we also have our own kind of media system in a way. You know, there are many
Chinese newspapers.
Newspapers, and then there's Chinese radio, Chinese TV stations, and they were great. They were here, like, my God, sometimes every day at the beginning, and then they were here definitely every week, and then, like, you know, taking the information from us to the community. And so that makes a huge difference too. So we work very closely together with the community leaders, the older associations, and then with San Francisco DPH, you know, very closely. So I really, and then the elected officials, right? Our supervisor, you know, here in our district helped a lot, the office. So I think it's really the collective effort of all, you know, stakeholders that make the difference.
And you know, nationally, this became so political, right? Like, it became this right versus left issue. There's so much distrust of the scientists. I'm wondering if both the history of Chinese hospital and just the fact that so many of the people you're serving are immigrants, has this played out differently politically in a place like Chinatown? People are more willing to listen to the doctors?
I think so too. I think it's the culture, that Chinese culture, that really, I think transparent messages, information to them. Us, we learned. We basically kind of like telling them everything we knew, right, at that time. And the other thing too, though, yes, I agree. You know that Chinese hospital was first created in the 1800s, right? Because the overseas Chinese are coming here, that they were not allowed to go to mainstream hospital for their healthcare, even though they were here to build the railroads, right, work very, very hard. When they got sick, when they were not allowed to access the mainstream hospital. So that's why they kind of really worked so hard to build their own hospital, right? At the beginning, it started with a dispensary, and then it was destroyed during the huge earthquake in 1906. And then later on, the first hospital was opened in 1925, and that was kind of like the real hospital. And ever since, that we overcome a lot of challenges to maintain the community hospitals. And it's very, very difficult. It's very challenging to maintain a small community hospitals nowadays.
Yeah.
But it does play a very important role, and for the community, to, you know, a place that people can go to when they're sick, or especially during the pandemic, a place really was here, or has been here, I should say, to safeguard the community.
Yeah, and they're already familiar with it. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos, and today we're talking with Chinese hospital CEO, Dr. Jen Zhang. I want to ask you, Doctor, what the thought was, what went through your mind when you started hearing President Trump refer to this as the Wuhan, what do you call it? The Chinese virus, the Hong Kong, all those things. Did you immediately think, this is trouble. This is going to be trouble because we're going to become, targets. I mean, what was your initial thinking?
Yes, that was really was very shocking to me that, when he called it, I think he called it Chinese virus, yeah. Right? And it's not Chinese virus, right? It's a virus that can infect anybody. It doesn't matter you're Chinese or what color your skin's, is, right? It really doesn't matter. It's a virus. It can infect anybody. So for elected officials to call it Chinese virus, it's really misleading. So that's why it caused a lot of problem. You see that people attacking Chinese, attacking Asian, right? And so it caused a lot of problem. And I want people to know that it's really wrong to think that it's a Chinese virus or to call it Chinese virus. And then so here in San Francisco Chinatown, we can proudly say that we have proved that it's COVID-19, it's preventable and controllable. And so don't call it Chinese virus or don't call it Kung Flu. It's not responsible to do that. And it's wrong to attack Asian or attack Chinese because of COVID-19.
What's your personal experience, Ben? I mean, we have colleagues and friends who have family in Chinatown or elsewhere in the city who are very concerned about, their parents just walking around. Have you had any personal experience or what are you seeing in the community right now?
It is. We're very concerned too, because we're giving out COVID vaccines every day right here. And we have seniors who are afraid to come out to get the vaccines because they worry about being attacked, right? And we've seen attacks here in the city and in the public transportation, even our employees. We really worry about the safety of our employees too, coming to work. And we actually have to work with our central station police department, say, can you make more rounds or like patrol more, especially during shift change, like at night. Mm-hmm. And so it's concerning, and it's a safety. It's a huge issue.
You know, when these vicious crimes started happening, a number of the assailants were black in some of the videos that were captured. And, Mayor London Breed made a point of saying, the black community does not support this. And I'm just wondering, are you aware of any, communications, any conversations, community conversations between the two communities, the AAPI community and the black community?
I think we try to work together. And to me, I think it doesn't matter what color. Again, like I said, I think that we should all work together, fight against the virus, and not people, right? Attacking people is not going to help any of these, not going to help with the pandemic, put it that way. And I think that that the very high percentage of Asian doctors, a very high percentage of Asian nurses or other healthcare providers, we're actually doing everything we can to help end the pandemic, right? Attacking Asian or any minorities, it's
or
wrong.
Pitting them against each other.
Them against each other. It's wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to switch gears a little bit. I mean, we've mentioned repeatedly, you guys are in Chinatown. This hospital was rebuilt just a few years ago. I know when you took over in 2017, it was facing some financial troubles. And Rose Pak, who is like a larger than life figure in not just Chinatown, but San Francisco politics, was a huge force in getting the money to rebuild the hospital. Talk about her. Did you guys have a close relationship? And what has it been like since her death a few years ago to keep sort of that work going?
Yeah, and Rose and I work together a lot. And a lot of it is the fundraising efforts, right? Because we did. And So she did a lot for the hospital, actually, back in the 70s, if you probably heard about that. Yes, it is very challenging to run a community hospitals. As you can tell that in California, we have like only 15 like also independent hospitals here. Like we have an independent hospital council, and there are fewer and fewer independent hospitals left. And nationwide, same thing, right? And then last year during the pandemic, there were a lot of small community hospitals were closed because of the financial impact. And so back in the 70s, Rose actually already at that time helped a Chinese hospital survived once already. Mm. Because at that time, there were a lot of hospitals were not meeting the seismic codes. Remember, there was an earthquake in LA, and then after that, there's a seismic code that you have to meet.
Well, and there's a big earthquake in 89 here in San Francisco.
Yeah, that too. And then I think earlier than that, there was the one in LA, they started to have this seismic codes issue. And then Chinese hospital was one of the hospitals notified that you need to fix a hospital to meet that code. And then apparently that you can't just fix a hospital overnight, right? And I think the hospital board, community leaders, physician leaders, and Rose at the time, and they were working very, very hard to get the state to help with that issue. And then we were able to convert. I wasn't here yet at the time. And so converted the medical building into a hospital, which we call the 79 building now. And in 2016, we opened a new hospital. That's what Marissa just was talking about, that it's a new hospital that we did a lot of fundraising, and Rose was very active leading that fundraising committee.
We mentioned, Marissa mentioned that she was a sort of a force of nature, very well known in politics, a mover and shaker, and also a chain smoker. And I'm wondering, did you ever try to get her to stop smoking? I don't think I ever saw her without a cigarette in her hand.
I think you can tell Rose what to do.
True.
That's true.
Rose nope. will do what Rose will do, right? Yeah. Yes, we talk about that, you know, like a smoking. But yeah, I don't think that you know, we did talk about that. But
yeah. So just about a minute left, Dr. Zhang. I mean, what's your hope as we hopefully exit this pandemic for the hospital and the community?
So right now we are actively giving out COVID vaccines. We really want to vaccinate as many people as you know, as possible, and then as fast as possible, so we can reach the herd immunity and kind of to get ready to reopen the community. And I call the all this economics you know, impact as like complications of the pandemic, right? The pandemic was really bad. It has been over a year, but then the complications of that, meaning the financial impact and all other, you know, like you were talking about your kids' school closed for so long. There are a lot of mental issue related to that, the long, I mean, staying home is good, but staying home for too long and being isolated is not good, right? So we see a lot of mental issues. And then, so we need to get our community or our business to reopen, our school to reopen. We need to get back to some kind of normalcy soon. And so that's what we're doing. We're doing everything we can to kind of really keep our residents healthy and happy. That way, you know, so we can get back to normal life as soon as possible.
You think that June 15th is okay? We're good on that?
I think it would be a good start.
All right. Awesome.
We at this point, Chinese hospital is COVID free. So we don't have any.
That's amazing.
Excellent.
Yeah, so.
All right. Well, congratulations, Dr. Zhen Zhang. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for this edition of Political Breakdown. We're a production of KQED Public Radio.
Our producer is Guy Marzorati. Our engineer today, Katie McMurrin. KQED's team includes Holly Kernan, Ethan Tovin-Lindsay, Vinny Tong, Erica Aguilar, and Jonathan Blakely. I'm Scott Schaefer. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. You can find me on Twitter at MLagos. And if you have ideas for who you'd like to see on our show, tweet them at us. We're always looking for new guests. I'm at M. Lagos, and Scott's at Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
I'm Jonathan Hill, host of The Weeds, and I know that politics can feel like a joke, and not always in the ha-ha funny way. On The Weeds, we try to split the difference.
When you think run out of money, you think that we're going to get to a point where, like, one guy retires and Social Security is like, sorry, y'all, got a board up.
Like that's it. Sorry, he got the last check.
I always call him Jim. Like, Jim got it. Sorry, y'all. He got the last check, and that's all the checks we got, and Social Security is no more.
Check out The Weeds every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.